I want to thank Mrs. Sharfman for coming today. You know, today is the ninth year that Rabbi Sharfman has given this year. I can't tell you what it's done for me, and I can't tell you necessarily what it's done for the rest of the people who come here. He changed my life. I think he changed most of the people's lives here as well. He changed our schedules. He made Sunday morning learning a part of our life. And it's just, you know, I was going over the list of shiurim that Rabbi Sharfman had given over the years, and it's just incredible the width and breadth of the topics, the knowledge, his clarity. And I still say one of his greatest strengths was, I don't believe he ever told anyone what to do during the 9 years. He gave us the facts, he gave us the opinions, he gave us the whys, he gave us the why nots. He told us why some people do it one way, why some people do it another way, why their way is correct, why our way is correct. But he never told you what to do, and I think that's a tremendous strength. And I think I need to say it again. As I said at the Shloshim, we have a wide variety of people who come to this year. We have Rabbanim, we have laymen, we have people who learned, we have people who went to public schools, we have people who are Baal Tshuva from birth, you name it, it's across the board in all sections. And he was able to reach out to every single one of us. And every one of us felt attached, and every one of us felt we learned something from that year. And although Rabbi Sharfman cannot give this year anymore, I know there are many people who have come up to me and told me they continue to download the shiurim, they continue to listen to the shiurim. And I think that's an incredible legacy that Rabbi Sharfman has left all of us, both to you and your family, and to all of us, and throughout the country. We know there are people who listen to him. I know someone told me in Los Angeles they listened to his shiurim. You know, and I think that's an absolutely incredible thing. And he literally, you know, changed our calendars, changed the way we think, changed the way we live as a result of these 9 years of shiurim. So I want to thank you, because I know you gave up your Motzei Shabbos. Your children certainly did. He was very dedicated. I know he enjoyed giving this year. And every year when I try to negotiate with him, he just poo-pooed me. Of course I'm doing it next year. So on behalf of this year, I think we need to thank you, your family, for everything that Rabbi Sharfman has done that we can't say to him directly. Thank you very much.
Before I begin to share, to continue on that beautiful note Harvey spoke about, I myself have been listening to many of the shiurim from Rabbi Sharfman, and one thing I noticed this past week, listening to some of the older shiurim, every week Rabbi Sharfman would get up, in the beginning shiurim, a lot of times he thanked the sponsors of that shiur. Sounds like the original sponsors of the shiur were involved with the Shames family. Dr. Abe Shames was tragically Nifter young. And the Rabbi Sharfman would make a point at the beginning of each shiur, so the series was sponsored for Dr. Shames, that Lee and the Shmosel were having to share. Really, there are other people, different weeks, different sponsors. But I think it's very fitting. You know, Chazal say that Mida Kedeged Mida, Kodesh Baruch Hu, gives us Tzchusim. Rabbi Sharfman was somebody every week that did something, Lee and Nishma, somebody else. So Bez Hashem for many, many years to come. I'm sure that there'll be many things to share amongst them that will be continue. He was using it as a springboard, as a zichron for many people. The person who brought that about, Kol Shekein, will have the schus that he'll be never forgotten with the share. Besides the schus itself, I have to tell you a phenomenal story that just happened this week. As we say in yeshiva, I was sitting there minding my own business. All of a sudden, the older Talmud calls me up. Rebbe, I have a shayla. What's the shayla? I'm not sure I ever got this one before. He's like, Rebbe, here's the situation. This is somebody who I haven't spoken to in probably a year. And me and a few friends, we want to go skydiving on Erev Rosh Chodesh Av. Since it's Erev Rosh Chodesh Av, it's not yet Rosh Chodesh Av, but it's Erev. Are we allowed to go skydiving in Erev Rosh Chodesh Av? That was a question that he posed. So, in thinking about it, I said to him, do you want the long answer or the short answer? So to his credit, he said, Rebbe, I'll take the long answer. Now, this is somebody who is a Talmud of Rabbi Sharfman. So I said to him, go on the yeshiva's website. I believe it's the second share that he ever gave. Rabbi Sharfman gave a share on bungee jumping and cosmetic surgery. I said, listen to that share and then call me back if you have a shayla. You can't make this up. Rabbi Sharfman, as Mr. Luchman did say, his shiur really covered the full gamut of halacha, of anything that's possible that will come up in a Jewish person's life. And anything you think is impossible to come up. But to think about it, he gave a shiur about bungee jumping and cosmetic surgery, and a guy calls you with a shayla, should he be skydiving on Erev Rosh Chodesh Av? You have an address, you have a place for that person to come. Absolutely amazing. So besides the schus itself, the Torah, the literal Torah that he taught so dedicatedly and so much amazing ways of insight and just the expression of how he put it, it's something which should not be forgotten. I guess we should also mention, thank Mr. Luchman for putting everything together. You know, words don't do it justice. You see from the way he speaks that the shiur is an integral part of his life, and that itself is a tremendous thing to see and to see how a person could live a shiur, be part of a shiur, live it, and be a tremendous element of his life is also tremendous chus. I guess I'll begin today's shiur. Topic for today's shiur, we titled it Wearing Zadie's Tefillin, an appraisal of sentimental value in halacha. And what instigated me to give this shiur is a fascinating shaila I found in the Sefer from Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. Zilberstein is currently a Rav in Bnei Brak, and maybe next to Rabbi Sharfman, he gets the most interesting shailas, interesting topics around. Our school has already translated a few of his Sfarim. He's a prolific writer into English. I think they're entitled Elein HaShabeach. It's a set, five-volume set of Art School. They also have What's If, What If. Very, very interesting questions. So I happen to have a sefer. Most people don't have it, probably. Me'a Sha'arim. Many different shaylos in halacha based on Shulchan Aruch. So the first shaylah in the sefer actually tells of an inspiring but at the same time tragic story. You look at the Marmakomos, it's the first one. He says, B'machlos amavos b'Germania, in the death camps of Germany, Shah Reb Chaim Yaakov Levi, Tzir Shishimis Bavo Mifal Yitzur Shtachim. This Reb Yaakov Levi, his job was, I guess, in making uniforms, involved in cloth. Vini Be'echra Yamin Matza B'Shtua Chamifal Chavilot Semer Acholim. He found, he was able to get his hands on extra wool. He himself made with his own hands tzitzis, turned this wool into tzitzis. He made holes you could put your head into. The storm kashas chuti at tzitzis. And quietly he tied knots of tzitzis. And he had a full, legitimate beged of dal kanfos. Wasn't long, whispers got out that a pair of tzitzis exists here in the concentration camp. So ke'elef ish ha'imashkim in kum. Sounds like 1,000 people would come to this man, Rabbi Yaakov Levi, to put on his talis kata, Nuvarach Atzitzis, Lefnei Boam Arotzkim Anatzkim Yimachshema, till they met their final end. Fascinating, amazing story of Jewish spirit that Zilberstein, it sounds like this is written in a sefer called Shema Yisrael. But Rabbi Zilberstein brings up a very, very interesting shaila. If we would have that pair of tzitzis, and it'll be a functioning kosher pair of tzitzis, obviously it's an artifact, you know, that you would show people, look at this, this is a pair of tzitzis that thousands, hundreds of thousands, thousands of people put on in the concentration camp. But we know when it comes to mitzvahs, there's an inyan of hiddur mitzvah. Hiddur mitzvah, it's really Gemara in Shabbos, Kaflam and Gimel and Beis. Zekeli van Vehu, the Pshat in the Gemara, this is my God and I'll exalt him. The Gemara talks about doing it, his name in front of the mitzvahs. Luav Noah, Sefer Torah Noah, Tzitzis Noah. Right? To have nice tzitzis is hiddur mitzvah. To have tzitzis, which would be yotzi, all the dales, make sure it would be a good shear, right? That's also part of hiddur mitzvah. What about this aspect? Having a pair of tzitzis that survived Nazi Germany, that was made by Mesiris Nefesh from a person in the concentration camp, would we say something like that halachically is qualified as a hiddur mitzvah? Would it be better for a person to wear that pair of tzitzis than versus a brand new, beautiful pair, the most mechudar pair you could buy in the store? What would be a greater hiddur? Or would this aspect, they call something which has sentimental value, here it's more than just nostalgia, it's something that Mesiris Nefesh, tremendous efforts were invested in making this pair of tzitzis. Would this pair of tzitzis have a milo of hiddur mitzvah to use it? That is the shayla that Reb Zilberstein poses. A beautiful, powerful shayla. When I was thinking about this, it dawned on me, probably in today's world, we should have shaylas like this a little more often. Perhaps. And the case that hit my mind, you know, unfortunately, many, maybe, you know, last generation, where we did lose so many people. You know, I remember some people telling me how they had whole generations that grew up, many without grandparents, without aunts and uncles. People lost lots of family. So the odds of having such a scenario like this are slim. Baruch Hashem, there are, you know, many God-fearing Jews emerged post the Holocaust, and especially the generation that was Shomer Shabbos. My father happens to be here today. He tells me stories about his father, Mr. Levi Newim, my namesake. The way they were Moser Nefesh for Shmira Shabbos back in the old New York, it was not an easy thing. People who lost jobs every Friday, come Monday morning to search for a new job. People lived with tremendous Mesiris Nefesh. So in the world today, let's say there's a person like that, his pair of tefillin. Now you have a grandson, great-grandson, putting on tefillin. What would we say? Somebody like that, to wear a grandfather's pair of tefillin, a grandfather who was Moser Nefesh for Yiddishkeit, does that have a kedima? You could buy a brand new pair, all the hidurim, but it's a kosher pair. You check it out with the sofer, it's 100% kosher, but there'll be ones which you go to the store, you want to buy the top of the line, the other pair. That it isn't. They didn't have that 60 years ago. But what would you say about that? For a child, a grandchild, great-great child, to wear the pair of tefillin from his ancestor, which is kosher, and it's imbibed with tremendous Mesiris Nefesh. But it doesn't have the hidurim of the fancy pair you roll out of the showroom. What gets a kedima? Very, very interesting shaila. And I asked around a lot of people. Spoke to quite a few poskim. And surprisingly, nobody knew of this shaila. I'm not sure why. Perhaps maybe by the end of this year, I'll tell you why. My theory why. But to me, it sounds like a very, very interesting shaila. The shaila that Rav Zilberstein poses about the pair of tzitzis, really, you know, with tefillin, you would have a similar shaila, tefillin from a grandfather. Does that get a hiddur? Is that a din of hiddur mitzvah, which perhaps is as good, maybe even better, than the flashy new pair that you could pick up from the top of the line sofa? So this is the question I'd like to explore this morning. And really takes us in a few different areas of halacha. Zilberstein himself, in dealing with the Shaila, his first area he goes to is Hilchos Brachos. And the din of Kedima for something which is chaviv to a person. So let's first examine these halachas. The second Maror Makom on your sheets is Siman Reish Yud Aleph. Mechaber writes the following. Hayilafan of Mine Peros Harbe. You have multiple fruits in front of you. In Berchoseim Shavas, if their brachos are equal, V'yesh V'neyam Imin Sheva, and you have amongst them one of the Zayiminim, Matim Min Sheva. The Zayiminim get a Kedima. Avopi She'enu Chaviv Kamoa Min Ha'acher. Even though it's not as beloved to you as the other men. The name Min Ha'ashava, but if there is no Zayimin, then Matim Ha'chaviv. Then the Chaviv comes first. Then Ein Berchoseim Shavas, and if they don't have equal brachas, afil yesh behemi min zayin, gives a few examples, tzoni the zayis, izmim shiir to yaktim, vafil eino chaviv. Let me explain this first shita. First shita here in the Shulchan Aruch is there's three things we're talking about. The first qualification is what bracha do you make? For example, the halacha of Bari Priya Eitz, something which is bracha is Bari Priya Eitz, comes before something which is Bari Priya Adam. And according to the first daya, that is something which always wins. If you have a Bari Priya Eitz, that would come before Bari Priya Adama, Pashat. The next layer of discussion is, okay, let's say the brachas are equal. I have two fruits, two things that the bracha would be Bari Priya Eitz. What comes first? Something which is Zayin Minin, and the seven species that Eretz Yisrael is claimed for, or something which is Chaviv, something which I like, is beloved to me, my favorite. What comes first? So the first day of Aaron Shulchan Aruch holds that Zayin Minim would beat out Chaviv. Even though this is your favorite fruit and you love it, but you know what? Zayin Minim, the species from Eretz Yisrael, that gets Kedima. So again, according to the first Shita, in dealing with three different things, if the brachas are not equal, so then you have to go with the eight before Adama. But if the brachas are equal, the two eights is, according to the first Shita, you would go Zayin Minim over Chaviv. Then the Mechaber brings, the fourth line, the Yesh Omrim, Shegam Bezet Tzorach Vahakdim HaChaviv. Even in such a scenario, you would still say Chaviv wins. V'nikra Chaviv Amin Sheragol Lios Chaviv Olav. Chaviv means something which is normal, it's normally your favorite. Even if now practically you happen to want the other one, your general favorite wins. So the second sheet over here says no. Of course, if the brachos would not be the same, of course, in the first part, everyone says, the first sif over here, that eight would be that hadama. But in the second tier, I have two eights in front of me. One's Chaviv and one's Zayin Minim. According to the second day, Chaviv would beat out Zayin Minim. Something which is your favorite, which there in Mechaber qualifies, something as generally your favorite, that would beat out Zayin Minim. Now let's go a little bit further. That's Sif Aleph. Sif Beis writes, or Rambam, according to the Rambam Shita, Im Haya Min. Echad Chaviv lo Yoser. Something is very beloved to you. Bein Shabar Chaseim Shavas. Bein Shinim Bar Chaseim Shavas. Doesn't matter if the brachas are the same, the brachas are different. Bein Sheyishua Min Shiva. Bein Sheinim Shiva. Whether you have Zayin Minim here or not. Maktim Achaviv lo. The thing which is beloved to you, the favorite wins, right? Talks about Chaviv, Oz Ba'osa Shah, something which is Chaviv to you right now. And if you don't happen to not want that, then you go after Zayin Minim. The Rambam here happens to have a Shita, that Chaviv is such a powerful thing. Now here he defines Chaviv a little different than the first day. It's not your general Chaviv, not your general favorite, but what's favorite to you right now. Here the Rambam will say, Chaviv not only trumps the din of Zayin Minim, but would even win out in terms of the bracha. One bracha is the eighth, and one is Adama. If the thing which is Chaviv to you is Hadama, you would still make the bracha on that first. So there's three different deos we have here. The first deo said, Chaviv is something, but you know what? Zayin Minim is greater than it, and different a greater bracha would beat it out. The second day was a little more, bit more pro-Chaviv. Chaviv would beat out Zayin Minim, so it wouldn't beat out something which is a greater bracha. And the third day the Rambam will say, something that's Chaviv will trump Zayin Minim and even trump another bracha. It's interesting what practically do we paskin. Shulchan Aruch brings multiple days there. So the Mishnah Berura spells it out even more clearly in the Bir Halacha. basically say that we would paskin like the second day in Sif Aleph, that Chaviv for sure would beat Zayininim. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. I found Rebbe Vadya also sides with that day. And Chaviv would have the power to beat out even Zayininim. The Rambam, it seems, is a day. Everyone, the Bir Halacha brings him as a tziruf. But this is something.
Want more food?
This is something which comes out here in Hilchos Brachos. Yes.
We're discussing, though, where the only mitzvah involved is the bracha itself. So we're not talking about a Jewish but where there may be a mitzvah in terms.
Right, right. This is a general daily bracha on multiple things in front of you. You know what they say about that. Right, I have some yeshivas out. We have quite a few bachurim here. Both said this is very important. They say, you know, you show up to the girl's house, and in front of you, you see, like, you know, a few different things, fruit, grapes. You don't know, but really, sometimes, sneaky father-in-laws are trying to give you a faher, trying to test you. What bracha do you make first? Right? And they're like, check. I don't know, did you just try this one? But for the girl or the boy? So these brachos are very important. You have to know which gets kedima. Zayininim, Chaviv, Eitz, Adama. You know, we should give a feher and base medesh before guys leave. So Rav Zilberstein referenced this Gemara, this halacha, and he says, what do you see from over here? You see from over here the element of Chaviv, something which is beloved, a favorite, has some value to you, that could supersede some elements of halacha. Even though Zayininim is a big deal, and it's a kedima and brachos, but Chaviv is even greater. That's where Zilberstein first brought. And if anything, I found even more of a point to support him. This is a very interesting shaila, but I found it in the modern Poskim talk about it. If you look in the back of your sheets, it's a Sefer and Brachos B'nei Ra'im with Gochachinsky. Pasha Pshat, the idea of something Chaviv is something beloved about this type of thing. Meaning, I like cherries. So, no, I have it in front of me. Chaviv would say, I'll make a bracha on cherries over grapes because I like cherries. It's something about that type of food. The shayla the modern post can bring up, let's say it's not a type of food, but it's a certain external element involved with the food. The first shayla he brings up is something cold or something hot. Right, I have two cans of soda in front of me. Right, the Coke cans now say, you know, tastes great when it's ice cold. So I have an ice cold can of soda, and I have a not as cold can of soda. Is there a din kedima on the one that's ice cold? Now, obviously, I'm going to take the one that's ice cold, but let's say you can have both. Is there a din kedima on halacha for the temperature? I have two pieces of food. One's hotter than the other. Does that qualify as a kedima for something chaviv? Rav Kuchinsky, the Sefer B'nei Re'im, says it does not. He says, "Hine chaviv machmas sibas chitzonis," something which is chaviv machmas because of something which is an outside thing, kamo macho kar, the kite shechaviv lo, o b'charif macho cham, or in the winter, something hot. Not sure that ever exists over here. B'chor gamkein mikri chaviv. He says, you know, that much he could hear, that's called chaviv. You know why? Because that is something, even though they're both cans of soda, they're both pieces of meat, but something which is hotter, or something which is colder, That makes a difference in that object. And you can view that, you know, here's a hot piece of meat, or here's a nice cold soda. That makes it a different thing. And you could have the din of chaviv when it comes to brachos, even though it's an external milo, but that's called, you could be a din kadima for that. But look what he writes next. He says, Ulo nira, kemuchaviv mishum shekibo chalazu mi rabo tzadik. Well, nasa chaviv. If this piece of challah is beloved to you because it's shirayim from the Rebbe, the Rebbe. No, the Eidza, the Etzim Adavar, this is not something innate. The Chayim Chavalo Mishim, right, or you baked in your house, sentimental value. Cholchi Agav No Avi Chaviv Linyim Bracha, the Eidza Begof Adavar. The Sefer B'nai Ra'im, Paskins, if it's Chaviv because it's shirayim from the Rebbe, or it's something, you sweated away, you baked your bread. This is your, right? I'm sure if there are bakers in this room, they'll appreciate their own handiwork. But he says that's not innately in the object, and they wouldn't have a din chaviv. However, I found, Rav Yashov argues. Rav Yashov, it's quoted in the Sefer Ashrei HaIsh, as well as brought down in his other Sfarim, Chashukei Chemed. He writes, Yesh lo beis chatikos chala, sha'achaz mim shirayim shol tzadik, even though it tastes exactly the same. No one's going to say the Rebbe's bracha makes it taste better. Even an external thing, a bracha from the Rebbe, a shirayim from the Rebbe, or I would assume, as Neiraim groups the two together, this is something that you yourself worked on, you made it yourself. He would say, in terms of all those brachos, that's called chaviv. So, chara, this would be a support to this position of Reb Zilberstein, that you know what? You sometimes do see in halacha a milo of something that has some sentimental value. This object which is chaviv, even something chaviv, because it has sentimental value. Got it from the Rebbe. I got it from, I made it myself. That would have a milo in halacha. And that would even supersede chaviv. We pass the halacha, supersede zayininim. Eretz chitos or the Geffen, just read it. Parsha Shalach. But seemingly, Zilberstein, he doesn't bring the Shirayim step. That only adds to his proof, seemingly. But Chara, you see that there's a Maila to something which has some sentimental value. Yes?
Is it possible that maybe you can make a difference between food and something else? Maybe Chavivus has to do with like Hana, benefit. And Titzis. If he has a grandfather's tefillin, there's a good chance he wouldn't even be, maybe dakos, maybe chutos, maybe not be. So maybe the it's not so much sentimental as it is chavivus in terms of benefit.
I'm glad of my free cape. Rav Zilberstein writes this.
He's glad school's finished.
Rav Zilberstein writes this and doesn't bring any dea against it. But I did discuss this with a few poskim, and my first sentiment, my first feeling, was exactly along the lines of Rabbi Fried. It's not so easy to compare the brachos of Berachos Hananin, the brachos of getting Hana, to the general shailah in mitzvahs. What should get kedima in the mitzvah? Berachos Hananin, yeah, if I get more Hana from something which is chaviv, yeah, that might supersede the zayiminim. But that's all din hana. I'm getting more enjoyment. But when it comes to a regular mitzvah, there's an issue of enjoyment, of feeling. Furthermore, the din of brachot itself has built in this din of chaviv. So there is a din of chaviv by brachos, as was said, because that's part of a person getting hanah. So yeah, in such a scenario, there's dinim. Okay, you want to say sentimental hanah is also considered hanah, and you can make a bracha. True, fine. But that's not a proof, not an absolute proof. To our shayla, where it's a shayla, putting on a pair of tefillin, should I put on the tefillin which is more mahudar, straight out of a sofer, or something which has a certain serious nefesh that was invested in it, certain sentimental value? There you don't see a proof from here. Yes?
There shouldn't be a difference in Hanah by Shira either. I
could see you're not a chassid.
It doesn't taste any different.
Right. But it's something that the schos, I got Shira.
And the schos by Tzitzis also, for tefillin.
Right. But in terms of bracha for Hanah, but Maisa, you're enjoying that. It may not be, you're tasting that, but it's a sensation that you're feeling. It's running through your bones.
It's where you pass the mitzvah of Baal Mahenis. So you can't, Dan, it's not about Hanah, but this is about Hiddur. Is Hiddur really within the together of
right.
Hanah and Hashem?
Right.
It's a different Madrega. It's a
right,
different
right.
aspect.
Right.
You can show Hanah if it makes a distinction. It's what's called normal. It's not, there's no difference in Hiddur. Whether it's from a rebbe or from the chogum, each one is uniquely different. You're not going to compare the two tzitzis. You're not going to say, "Oh, I like tzitzis that went to the Holocaust more than I like regular tzitzis." It's not. There's a difference in the type of mini tzitzis. There's maybe one has nicer strings, one has more things attached to it. Potato bolo. It's the potato bolo is the same potato bolo you ate yesterday. This one might be more spiritual, but it goes mashal chogum. That's like pummel, not mashal chogum. That's like achshav.
Right. Right.
Says.
The Mishabura actually brings two deals with that. Do we go with, you saw that's Machlokas and Machaber and brings the Rambam. Right, is it now or is it in general? The second, but you're right. I don't think potato kugel and tefillin should be grouped together so simply. Excellent point.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by sentimental. You could say sentimental is, I could see if somebody had a pair of tefillin that went through the Holocaust, so it will affect his davening. In other words, this is the tefillin that Zaidi or whatever had to see his nefesh, his davening won't be the same. As opposed to a brand new tefillin, okay, they're very nice. Is that what you mean by sentimental? Or do you mean sentimental is just that family heirloom?
Right.
It's
more the second way. I'll tell you a story. Remind me of a story. In researching this, someone told me a story of the Or HaChaim's tefillin. I don't know if anyone here knows of it. It seems there's a maisa that the Or HaChaim, after his nifter, I don't know who did this, the Amana, somebody, basically they sold the tefillin to the highest bidder. And the Or HaChaim's tefillin were Or HaChaim HaKadosh, and he's very, very machmed not to speak with it. And it was sold al tanai, that the person buying it knows that he won't speak in it, and we use it. And he bought it, and ever since the time he bought it, when he would daven, his davening would be a different davening. And it was just like overwhelming, amazing, and till one time, he spoke with...
Is this a joke?
No, this is a story. He spoke when he was wearing the tefillin, and after that, he didn't feel the same. And the basic of the story was that the power invested in that tefillin wasn't from, it's the Or HaChaim's tefillin, had, the game replica. It's because he invested a kedusha that it wasn't, no one talked wearing these tefillin. Once that was abused, it didn't have the same effect. Now, that's a story which I would believe because it's about the Or HaChaim. But we're not talking about tefillin that has superpowers within them and stuff, but it's something that has some sentimental value, and of course that would add something to it. But short of that, you're right, we're talking something which really just has some sentimental value, something that you really could put a price tag like that.
When you talk of Hanorah,
a person who can't afford a $250 Lulu Vanessa can have more on or a $30 Lulu Vanessa than the one who's spending $250 for, depending on the beholder.
Right, right. That brings up to Mr. Cat, you know, that right, mitzvahs lava hanos nitno. Really, mitzvahs are things which we're not supposed to get hanah. We're supposed to do them as, you know, servants of, right, as best as we can. Right, so here, I see something, it's hard to put our fingers on, but there's a certain sentimental value. I'm using an object which has tremendous mesiris nefesh, it's a schus that's embedded in it, it's meaningful to me, and is that something which would beat out other hidurim? So we're saying, from this proof, from Hilchos Brachos, doesn't seem like an absolute proof. I'll take one more point, then I'll go to the next step. Yes?
Like a talis, like there's no Indian, so if you're going to daven with the home, there's no Indian putting on your specific talis versus the shul's talis. It's just a matter of, there's an aspect of hidur, but there's no aspect of chavivas when it comes to
matter. Very good point. You're supporting. Huh? 15? So this point from Zilberstein, I don't think is an absolute proof. But Zilberstein has a second raya, and this is really what the crux of this piece is based on. There's an amazing Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Ches. It's on the first side of your sheets. Read through the Gemara to make sure everyone believes the story here. Tana Rabbana. Manisim Nasu V'Dalosos. What are these nisim that happened to the doors of the base of Mikdash? Amar Kishanach Niknor. L'Avi Dalosos Me'Alexandria Shemitzrayim. There's a person named Niknor who went to bring back fancy doors from Alexandria of Egypt. Because there also Amar of Nechshol Shabayam, the Tova. While I was going back on the boat, there was a tremendous wave, wind, and the boat started to sink. Nalu Achas Mehem V'Hatil L'Yam. So they took one of these ornate, heavy doors and they threw it into the sea. V'daimo Nachayam is Ofo. That didn't stop the raging waters. Bikshu L'Hatos Chaverta. People on the boat want to throw the second door in. Amun who? The karka. So Nigner got up and tied himself to this door. Amunahem. Halitinuli ima. If you're throwing this door over, I'm going overboard with it. After that act of Mesiris Nefesh, Miyad Noch Hayam Mizufa. Once he did that, the waters stopped raging. Nickner says, oh boy, why did I throw the first one in? It was bothering him about the other one. When they got to the ports of Akko, according to one version of the Gemara, all of a sudden that door came out from under the ship. Another opinion was there was some sea creature which swallowed that door and spit it up on the side of the land. V'alel Amar Shlomo, the Gemara says, this is appropriate to quote the Pasuk of Shlomo Melech, Kalash Patino Arazim Ritino Berusam, Al Tikri Berusim Ela Beris Yom. There was a covenant of the sea with the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Lefikach, kol ha-sha'arim shayi b'mikdash, nishtanu liel shel zav. All the doors that they made in the Beis HaMikdash, they eventually covered them in gold. Chutz mishar nikner, except for the gate that was named after him, shar nikner, m'neishan nasavo nisim, because nisim were done to it. Zerbersin says, look what happened over here. This person, Niknor, invested tremendous Mesiris Nefesh, went to Alexandria. The boat was going to sink, but he wanted the best doors for the Beis HaMikdash, and they wouldn't let them throw overboard the doors, the second door. And seems there's tremendous appreciation for his mysterious nefesh. They named the gate Shar Nikna, but more than that, they kept those doors as is. Those doors to the base of Migdosh were not covered in gold. Great trivia quiz. Right? All the doors of the base of Migdosh were gold, except Shar Nikna. And the reason is because of his mysterious nefesh. So Observacine says, look what you see over here. You see somebody who invented Mesiris Nefesh, even though otherwise all the other doors were gold, this they kept separate. This they kept as is, as a zecher, as a schus, for this nicknor had tremendous sentimental value in the Beis HaMikdash, the Beferah Shikamara. So this Reb Zilberstein wants to hang his hat that there would be, practically speaking, you had a choice between two pairs of tzitzis, a nice new pair, or the pair that emerged from the Holocaust. Someone invested so much in Mesiris Nefesh. Zerbesin says, halacha l'maisa, I would say, that's a milo, and that's something you could forgo another milo. There's a milo having a golden door in the base of Mikdosh, but they forgoed that milo to keep the door with the Mesiris Nefesh of Nikna. Yes.
The fact that a miracle happened with the door that would be not the same as Mesiris Nefesh, the same as sentimental.
Well, I say it's even more, it's a miracle. You know,
to fill in the conversation was also a nace in itself.
Right? You know, there's nace Nigla and nace Nister. You know, the fact that he ended up right in the sweatshop and he was able to put together a pair of tzitzis, carve something out, that's also an element of nace. I hear your point. One's a beferish nace, one's Zilberstein. On that ground, I wouldn't take down the pshat. But Zilberstein, he is tough company. He was a Rabbi Yoshev Zetzal's, Rabbi Yoshev was his father-in-law, which also means that Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky is his brother-in-law. So he asked his shaila to his brother-in-law, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky. And he challenged him. He said, what's your proof from this, Kamar? Why was he going to Alexandria of Egypt to get doors? Because they were nice, fancy doors. So we're dealing with something, you're right, it wasn't gold, but it's still very, very fancy, very chashiv. What's your proof that you would have the right to forgo something for a milo of something with sentimental value? Here you had both. You had the sentimental value and you had beautiful doors. Furthermore, I told this over to a certain posik. I thought he had an even more Aminei Bey, more basic question on it. He says, you're not addressing the shaila. The shaila we really have is outside of Birchas Hananim when it comes to fulfilling a mitzvah. What should I do? I could do the mitzvah in halakhically the most mechuder way, most beautiful way, or I have something which has some beautiful sentimental value. You don't see from here that we're overriding a halakha to keep something of sentimental value over something which doesn't have. Obviously, no one would say, should I wear a pair of tefillin which is not 100% kosher, which is a very, very b'di'eved, versus a new pair. No one would say that. So obviously, the halacha is what stands first. Yes?
But tefillin are different things. There are like, you know, dakos and gasa, but there are different madrigos of tefillin.
Right.
You talk about a pair of tzitzis. So the rules on tzitzis, it has to be a that's okay. Has to be show the Shema, and has to be tied the Shema. Obviously, presumably, the case is, if it's not all the requirements, Elmai is not pretty. So it's not null. The only question is the null as versus the the halachic nafkaminas.
No, there could be there are some. It could be there are some halachic dinim. You know, the size of it. Well, there's a size of the baguette. This it works.
Size.
Right, the stripes.
Assuming that it was halachically appropriate in terms of size, because assuming you know what the sheer nama is,
right?
That's the size. Now, assuming that, presumably, we're going to talk about different sizes. LMI brush is it a nice looking talus or is it not nice looking talus? Is it old? You know, beaten up looking.
Right.
It's not noah. So maybe it beats out noah, but it doesn't beat out other halachic nafkaminas.
Right. So you would agree, there's if something would be a halachic maila, and you don't hear we have any raya from there.
Right.
Right.
Well, on the other hand, the question of which one's more you know,
beautiful.
Zekeli Manveu.
Beauty and
there is an Indian of Zekeli Manveu, but the question is what's considered Manveu?
I hear. That perhaps could be. Now, I just want to clarify with one story and then do one more step. So it sounds like even this proof that Reb Zilberstein is bringing from this Gemara is also not an absolute proof, because we don't clearly see in terms of halacha, getting some mailon halacha versus something that has sentimental value, the sentimental value would win. And when I speak to one postdoc, he referenced me a story. He said he believes it's in one of Reb Zilberstein's other svarim. I couldn't find it there. But the story is a very interesting story, similar type thing. But there was a Holocaust survivor that during the war made for himself a sitter. He sat there and from memory wrote out tefillos. And same type of thing. He wrote out tefillos. And people used this sitter, and it was pretty good. There were some mistakes in it, but he had the sitter. After he got older, he wrote in his tzava that he wants to be buried with his sitter. Last request. The Chevra Kedisha asked the Shaila Torah Hillel Yashuv, what should they do? He's a person, a Holocaust survivor, a tremendous mysterious nefesh. He made a sitter for the people in the concentration camp. Should he be buried with his sitter? Well, he also ruled that he can't be. Because being the fact that this sitter, halakhically, was still a good sitter, the only time we would bury a sitter is if it's worn out, if it's not in good shape. To take something which is usable and just bury it, that's something we don't do. So even though it had tremendous sentimental value to the person, and the person, you know, quote unquote, he deserved many things, and he wanted to take this as his ticket to Olam Haba. But Rabbi Yosef felt 100% the person's a wonderful person, we should honor him, we should mechaben him, but you can't violate halacha and take that sitter and put it into the ground if halacha dictates you can't. Powerful story supporting this idea that one has to be careful really when you're balancing sentimental value and halacha. Sentimental value has a place, but not necessarily trumping something which is a clear halachic mila. And I did see Rav Chaim Kanievsky does say perhaps the person himself who he was doing the mitzvah with that object, for him, he could still use that object versus getting something new. Somebody else who didn't do the mitzvah, that might be different. But Rav Chaim Kanievsky, perhaps for the person himself, there might be a mile to that. I was looking, I could not find a makor for that. Maybe I'll ask Rav Chaim next time I see him. But there's a story I did find, people say, about the Taz, that the Taz had a talus that he davened in, and his Talmidim wanted him to get a new one. It was old, it was tattered. Yeah. You could do better with a new one. And he forbade them. He's like, this is a talus that has so much tears and so much tefillos in it. I can't bring myself to get something new. The person who was involved in the mitzvah himself, He's using that. Chaim Kanievsky's word is a maskeres of a mitzvah. Something like that has tremendous value. Chazal say, the Gemara says, sentimental feelings are meaningful. The Gemara Bava Metzia says, a person would rather something that I use, my own sweat and tears, more than 10 times that amount that someone else gave me. The Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos talks about when they list drashas, the Gemara makes an order based on kivin de asami drasha chavivimov. Something that you, Torah that you worked on, that you're mechanish, are feelings and sentiments that are special. And that has chashivas. Natan is going to make a list. He's going to list that first. I want us to end with one story. It's a beautiful story.
Before you. First of all, I know because Rosh Chodesh today is sort of, our timing is off. So for those people who need to leave, by all means, after this last story, but I think you have more stuff to say, right? No? No, you're done? Okay, so you're more than welcome to leave after this year, but after you've had a little bit more food. I want to thank all of you for coming to the shiur this year. It was a difficult year for many of us, and you know, because of what happened, and thank God we're able to continue this year. Wish everyone a happy summer, and God willing, I'll try to negotiate a deal with Rabbi Kier or whatever for year number 10. So I'm sorry to interrupt, please.
So, again, to summarize, this shayla of something of sentimental value versus something in halacha, Zilberstein brought perhaps two proofs that sentimental value should be something which has a hitter, and perhaps is something which could have some kedima. But both of those proofs, we saw ample room to challenge. He was challenged. And halachically, Rav Chaim Kanievsky comes out that you would go with the object which is more mechuder in terms of halacha, and sentimental value would not take a precedence in that such a thing. But at the same time, for sure for the person himself and in general, sentimental value is something which we treasure, is something that has meaning. And I remember I was told a story years ago from Nelson Tzvi Finkel, Zitzal, of the Mir. Tell a story of Chaim Shmulevitz. He was walking around the area of the Mir Yeshiva. Anyone know who's been there? Around there, now the Mir bought up a lot of those properties, you know, it's more and more yeshiva buildings. But there's a lot of like manufacturing, like simple shops, kiosks, right by the yeshiva there. There's blacksmiths, this, that. There was a shoemaker. Chaim Shmulevitz was walking with the Talmidim, talking and learning, when all of a sudden he passes by this shoemaker. And he stops, looks at the little baby shoe the shoemaker had there, and he starts crying. The Talmidim were all like confused. Like, he was talking about Baba Basra a second ago, and now he's crying. Side of yeshiva over here, like, what's going on? So Chaim Shmulevitz turned to Talmidim and taught him a beautiful lesson. He says, you know what I'm thinking about right now? I'm thinking about the enjoyment, the hana, that a mother's going to get when she puts that first pair of shoes on that baby. As a young parent, you could appreciate it. As a grandparent, too. I'm thinking about that sentiment. Think about that hana. Rav Nelson Tzvi would say over the story, he would point out, here he has this big Rosh Yeshiva, he's always learning, but you know what? There are certain feelings, there are certain sentiments of life which we experience, we should treasure, we should hold dear. And it serves a tremendous role of inspiration in life. He says, something you're only going to have in this world. The experience, the sentiments, the value, of course, is tremendous value to all these things, to an object, the tefillin of Mesiras Nefesh, tzitzis of Mesiras Nefesh, a sitter of Mesiras Nefesh. And in Yiddishkeit, they all play a tremendous role in inspiring us and Bez Hashem lifting us to higher and higher madrigas. Thank everyone very, very much for welcoming me, I guess, and we appreciate it.